Alrighty. Well, welcome, 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 welcome to the Not Quite Midnight Jazz Show here on iHeartRadio. We appreciate you being here. We have this is a very special show. This is exactly what we started off wanting to do. What we started off wanting to do was simply to let people know about jazz artists that were out there, because I think as an educator and musician that jazz as an art form is becoming niche, and that's the last thing it needs to be. It needs to be back in the mainstream. You imagine that there was jazz on pop radio in the 70s? You know, when I was growing up, when I was a youngster, I know, it seemed like a long time ago. It seemed like the radio had a crank on it then, but it didn't. And one of the new jazz artists that I found using Spreaker that allows me to get on iHeartRadio was a gentleman that we're going to bring on in just a second. A guitar player, his name is B.D. Lenz, and I was just fascinated by his music. I just thought it was the hippest, coolest thing that I'd heard in a long, long time. And I am so happy that I've got a chance to actually talk to B.D., and we're going to talk to him in just a second as soon as I click the button and ask him some questions about where he's from and you know what and what his thing is, because I personally want to know, and I'm sure that you need to know. And as we get to show up on iHeartRadio, we're going to play some music from his catalog, which is actually pretty extensive. without further ado, if I can click the button without bringing the entire freaking internet down, and I did click the button, and the internet is still up, and the lights are still on, so I'm good. So I'd like to welcome BD Lins onto our show. BD, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Willie?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you. Thanks so much for putting up with my my technical madness. You understand it as
seems
a foreign musician.
Seems like you did a good job, man.
Sometimes there's technical madness, you know, and you know, the gig has to go on anyway, even if it doesn't work like you thought it was going to work at 7 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, you got to play.
Right.
I understand that. Listen, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I tell you what, I found your music because it was on this, you know what, it was in the catalog, and I do a show on Spreaker that allows me to do a show on iHeartRadio, and I was fascinated. I was so excited to find that there was really hip, interesting music with really interesting improvisation, not like some of the stuff that passes for jazz or smooth jazz. And I thought, well, you know what? At some point, I'm going to talk to this dude because this is just too cool.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Hey, man, no, I was really, you know, I feel giddy because I was really digging. I was like, man, that was
cool.
There's so much music out there, and there's so many great musicians out there that unfortunately more people need to hear about. So
true,
let's
absolutely.
Talk a little bit about who you are. You know what I'm saying? And I know you've met them, and we'll talk about them. So let's talk about a little bit about who you are. Where are you from?
I'm from northern New Jersey, born and raised here. I moved out for a little while, but I'm back here basically as my base of operations. I'm about, 40 miles from New York City.
Cool. Because I was born in the wonderful garden city of Newark.
Nice.
We left when they were burning it down in 67, so I can barely claim it. But if you look through the records, you'll find in Beth Israel Hospital my footprint, so I am from there.
See, it all comes back to New Jersey. That's what I tell everybody.
Everything seems
to. It always comes back to Jersey.
Oh, gosh. Listen, when did you start playing music?
I started playing music pretty young. I was fifth grade. I played saxophone in the early grades, and even through high school. I picked up a guitar my freshman year of high school. My uncle gave me one. He was passed to him. He didn't really play it. He passed it on to me. And basically my life changed ever since that was in my hands.
See, I could tell that there was some saxophone playing in your past because of the way you construct solos, the way you think about the line. Because guitar players, it's been my experience, they think more up and down, more chordally
mm-hmm.
first. And your solos don't. Your solos go line-wise. They just do. And I play the saxophone. That's how I know.
Very cool. Well, you got good ears, man. Yeah. good.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that's what draws me to Souls, because being a saxophone player, I'm looking for what's happening in the line. How are we moving from point to point, as opposed
right.
to sort of the chunk, and I don't mean this in a demeaning way for guitar players, but sometimes there's a chunkiness in, you know, what improvisation and chords, because guitar players try to do what piano players do. They try to intersperse chords along with the line, and sometimes it breaks the line up. I know,
right.
I know, and I know my listeners are going, you guys are so in the weeds. I know.
Right, we're getting musical nerdy here. But, yeah, you're absolutely right.
But we can't. How often do you get to have these conversations with other musicians? Hardly ever. Hardly
true.
Ever.
True.
So, you know what? So back to the regular questions. So who were your musical influences? Because mine were people like Phil Woods and the like. Who are your musical influences?
I mean, I grew up in the suburbs, you know, and I basically grew up on rock music. Rush, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix. But, you know, the guitar players that I really got interested in earlier, again, were more rock and blues guys. Like, I was a huge Stevie Ray Vaughan fan. You know, Joe Satriani, late 80s when the whole shredding guitar player thing was in. And then, you know, it wasn't until I went to school, music school, that I got into the jazz thing. And then slowly I kind of moved through the spectrum over to the jazz side. But, you know, I'm still kind of a rocker at heart, but I have the whole jazz thing now. So, yeah, I think my music kind of reflects that I have both, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So where'd you go to school?
I went to music school. It's called Musicians Institute. It's in L.A., right in Hollywood. And I did a one-year program there. And then following there, I went back to college in New Jersey, and I studied some more music there. And I studied privately with a lot of people also.
Oh, cool, cool. Because, I mean, it seems to me that that your music is not formula, and there's so much formula music now that is thought out. And I think that's what drew me to it. It isn't just the formula stuff.
I couldn't agree more in terms of, like, whatever's on the radio, particularly, like, smooth jazz radio, which, you know, it's not really my thing, but when I listen to it, it's like, it's hard to tell a difference from one song to the next. Even as a musician, like, it all sounds the same to me, you know?
You're right. It's like one big medley. Like, oh, that's the same
right.
song.
Exactly.
Oh, they're sort of taking the Casey and the Sunshine Band, and you know, their first four or five hits on the radio were all the same key, all the same tune.
right.
They just were. You're like,
right.
That's the same song.
Mm.
Those are the same changes. Anybody hear the
right.
same changes?
That's definitely a formula going on.
So, another thing that drew me to your music is that it was all thought, all the tunes were thought out, and they were all not formula, and they were not formula driven. So when did you start performing live? When did you start doing CDs and albums and that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, I kind of, you know, I've been playing, I was playing and studying for years and, you know, slowly, you know, joining bands and, like, I mean, the first professional band I played in, and I say professional in quotes because it was, you know, not really, but it was like this really, really cheesy wedding band I played in, and we never played any weddings, but we did a lot of Holiday Inn lounges, you know, but that was really like my...
You gotta love it, man.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta start somewhere. So that was my first, like, live playing. But, you know, even from the beginning, I sort of was trying to set up my own thing. And it wasn't even necessarily so much that, like, I felt I had to express my own thing. It was just more like, you look, I want to work, and, you know, I'm not finding a whole lot of work, so I'm going to set up my own gigs and band and all that. And, you know, so, you know, I finally decided to do my first record. I was probably in my mid-20s, and this was the end of the 90s. You know, and then it just kind of went from there. I mean, this thing's been just slowly building, and I'm working on record number 9 now, which will be out in just a couple months. And, nice. Yeah, so I'm doing my thing.
That's what it's all about, yeah. You know, you mentioned wedding bands that don't play weddings. Golly. You know what? That's not the worst thing that ever happened, that you don't play weddings.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah, sure. No, at the time I didn't really care. I just wanted to be playing music out live. But I mean, the alternative, like I said, we were playing Holiday Inn lounges, and that wasn't really a whole lot better. So.
No. Now in the Armada room of a Holiday Inn on Highway 42, I got.
Yeah.
You. I got.
Pretty
you.
Much.
Where the bar manager is like, could you guys turn down a little bit?
yeah, no, I mean, it was like as cheesy as you could possibly imagine it, you know. But like I said, at the time, I didn't really care so much because I was out playing music.
As long as you're out there playing, I get it. And a check from the Holiday Inn never bounced. That's the best part.
and that's another thing. I mean, I was getting paid. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot, but, hey, I was making money playing my guitar, and really that's, you know, all I've ever wanted to do.
Understand. So who do you listen to now?
My tastes are really eclectic. I mean, I still have my favorites, of course. My favorites probably be, you know, guitarist Pat Metheny, you know, other guitarists, of course, Mike Stern, you know, these more contemporary guys. But, you know, again, my tastes run all over from classical music to, you know, I love singer-songwriters, you know, and I do a lot of those gigs too. So I'm not trying to be vague, but, like, really I'm a little bit all over the place, so.
No, I got you, because there's all sorts of stuff on my iPod, too. People are like, are you listening to that? Yeah, well, yeah, I'm first of all, I'm a band kid, so of course I've got concert band music on my iPod. Yeah, sure I do.
Right.
Yeah, I've got Phil Woods and concert band music on my iPod. But I got you. So because I found your music on the internet, and I found it inside, I mean, this is as niche as it can be. I found it inside the catalog of a website that does online radio and online broadcasting. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen since you started back? I guess you started back in the early 90s. What are the biggest changes in the industry that you've seen that are positive?
Well, you know, I have to say, like, with every change that there is, there's good and bad. You know, like, you know, the whole recording thing has changed dramatically since I started, and that wasn't even that long ago. You know, it's just in terms of formats and being digital, and, you know, there's no more playing in a room together. It's people emailing tracks, which, again, I mean, there's a downside to it and there's an upside to it. Like, so, you know, the cool thing is that, you know, you can do a lot more in your house now and your basement in terms of recording, but also in terms of, you know, promoting your band and booking gigs and, you know, with the internet. I mean, that there's so much more available to the, you know, small time guys like myself that were never possible, You know, I don't know that I'd be booking nearly as much as I would be by myself back in the day, because I just wouldn't have the, you know, the tools at my disposal.
Understood. Understood. The last time, you're right, but I think the last time that I played on a recording, I think I ripped out my best mic and did it here in my teaching studio, and emailed it, and
yeah,
it ended
that's
up
what
on
everybody's
the recording.
Doing
like,
now, you know,
oh,
and again, like,
so,
you know,
so weird.
I can imagine guys, you know, older guys who, you know, did it the old-fashioned way might be a little bothered by this, you know, but again, it gives us the capability of doing so much more by ourselves. So, you know, there's definitely an upside to it.
We'll be right back. Yeah, and unfortunately, do you think part of the downside is that sometimes the synergy of being there, doing it live with other musicians is sometimes lost?
Yeah, there's no doubt. That's definitely a downside, being in a room and playing together. And there's a vibe that can certainly get lost. But to me, I just feel the positives kind of outweigh the negatives, you know.
That's very true. All right, this is one of those high school guidance counselor questions, and I apologize before I ask it. So where do you see yourself and your career in 5 years?
In 5 years? I mean, I don't see any major changes coming along the way. I mean, I'm just doing my thing. I'm working, I'm putting out records. And again, you know, I'm happy with that. If something better comes along, you know, cool. But, you know, I'm just going to keep doing this. I've been touring more, particularly overseas, and I hope to do more of that. But, I'm just doing what I'm doing, really. I don't see much of a big change.
So where have you been overseas?
My band does tours in the UK every year, and these tours have been getting bigger and bigger. They seem to like us over there, so we're going back. And like I said, each time we go back, it's a little bit longer. So I have another one set up for July next year, about 3 weeks we'll be there. So.
Cool. Okay, so where can our listeners see you next? Do we have to go to New Jersey?
I will be in and around the New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania area, all over the place coming up in the next few months. And looks like I do have a CD release party for my new record set up in the end of March in northern New Jersey, a place called the Stanhope House. That's probably my biggest one coming up that I'm going to start plugging soon.
Oh, cool. And your website name again is
bdlens.com.
BDLENZ.com.
Yes.
BDLENZ.com. And if you go there, you can find ways to go back and purchase the recordings that go back. You know what? It's pretty amazing. If you go back and listen to the recordings that were, you know, some of the early albums, you'll find that they're as fresh as if you did them this afternoon. There's nothing dated. I don't think there's anything dated about the innovation. I don't think there's anything dated about the recording. So don't think that you just have to wait for the new album. Don't think that that's what I'm asking you to do. What I'm asking you to do, as my listeners, I'm asking you to go back and get the other recordings too, because it's not that you won't understand a new one. This is not a movie. This is not a sequel. But I think you'll appreciate the new stuff a little more if you go back and listen to the whole and listen to how things have come along over time. I like to do that. I like to go back and listen to a lot of people's, especially older recordings. When I started listening to people like Phil Woods, it was really cool to go back and listen to some of his recordings back in the 50s, and then listen to recordings that he had just done. Right before he passed away. And it was just really interesting to see the development in the solos. I mean, the difference in the sound and the approach. I'm kind of a jazz geek. I just thought it was very interesting, and I think that the same thing can be said for what you're doing. I want to ask some general questions about jazz, because I started this whole thing because I thought, and I still believe that jazz is becoming too niche. Jazz used to be in the mainstream.
Right.
Even jazz, like when I was a youngster back in the early 70s, where you heard people like Chuck Mangione on regular radio during the middle of the day.
Yes, it was
Feel So Good. But you know what? You did hear people like Chuck Mangione and Chris Fadala, for God's sakes, on the radio during the day. And it's one of those things that sort of drew me as a young person in the jazz, in the music. Can we ever get back to there?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. That's a great question. I think there's a few things behind that question. Number one is just, a cultural thing. I mean, there's just no you know, the irony is that it's American musicians who have really innovated this music, and yet in our own country, you know, this music's not really celebrated like it is overseas. I mean, that seems so strange. And the other thing, you know, is that the music itself has to make it, you know, has to be relevant, you know. And I think that's sort of on the part of the artist and the labels involved. I mean, you know, like we were just saying, pretty much to me, all the music on smooth jazz radio is just the same repetitive, bland music, you know. And, you know, of course there's an audience for that, and there's people who love that music, and that's great for them. But I don't think that it's innovating anyway or again, you know, keeping itself relevant, you know, just by rehashing the same old stuff. And even as much as I love, you know, the traditional, you know, straight ahead thing, Miles and Coltrane, and I love that music. But, you know, if musicians now just keep repeating that same old thing, you know, to me that's not keeping current and that's not making it relevant. You're just trying to redo what they did. And, you know, I'm not going to play John Coltrane's music better than he did by any means, you know.
Understood. Yeah, it's kind of a shame that a lot of people have decided to take the smooth jazz route, and that's cool for them, but it doesn't get us back to mainstream. You know what I tell people all the time? You know what I live in? I live in a sort of a different world, and whenever I go to certain rallies and stuff, they're always playing country music, and I'm like, do you know what the only original American art form is? It's jazz. It's the only thing that we can that we can hold up and say, oh yeah, we did this, we did that. You know, it's the only
thing. Yeah, absolutely. And
we can,
and again, you know, the rest of the world really appreciates it much more than we do.
Yeah, for me it's incredibly frustrating when I see. I live in Tampa in Hillsborough County, so we're blessed that we still have a music program, and we have 27 high schools in our county, and each of them have music programs, and that's just not the same everywhere. And most of them have a jazz program that meets as a class every single day, and that's just unfortunately that's an anomaly that doesn't happen anymore.
Absolutely.
And I think that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't get the bean counters to understand how important that art form is and how important music is for kids and how good it is for them. So,
you're right. You know, I'm a positive person at heart. I'm pretty optimistic. So I think that, you know, I think that musicians will take this music and evolve it in a way that will, you know, make it relevant to now and to people, you know, of this age. So, you know, it will continue. I think so. You know, it might change forms and sound a little bit, but that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to evolve, you know.
Yep, you're absolutely right. All right, I tell you what, we're going to take this interview, and I'm just telling you now, Beatty, we're going to take this interview and we're going to edit it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to slip in some tunes and make this 15 or 20 minutes. About 45 minutes when I'm done with it.
Sounds
and then
good,
we're
man.
Going to put this up on iHeart, if that's
great.
Cool with you.
Yeah, it's great, man. I appreciate it, Willie.
Hey, listen, if we don't start helping each other when we can with the tools we have available, what will happen to us?
You're right, man. You gotta keep plugging away. You know, that's been my motto, so.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you coming on this afternoon. I appreciate you spending a little time with us, and I hope it's not the last time. And I will keep paying attention. And when the new album comes out, we're going to promote that, and we'll get it and promote it on the Not Quite Midnight Jazz Show on iHeartRadio, because I think that it's the kind of music that will bring that relevance back that we keep talking about. It's my heart.
True.
It's so important. It's so important to me as a 55-year-old dude that these young kids get back to listening to this music and more importantly, playing this music because if not, it's going to go away here, and that I just never want to see.
Right on. Thanks, Will. I totally agree, man.
All right. Listen, BD, thank you ever so much for coming on. I appreciate you. Have a fantastic weekend. You playing somewhere this week?
Yeah, I have a gig tomorrow. That's my last one until after Christmas, though.
So. Oh, cool, cool. Well, until I talk to you again, have a Merry Christmas. Give your family a hug for me. They won't know where the heck it's coming from. So some fat black guy in Florida, he says for me to hug you, so I'm going to hug you. He's from North.
If you say there so, you man, if you say so, I'll do it.
That'll be the end. Oh, he's from North.
Right.
All right, well, thanks again, BD. I appreciate you being on with us, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Willie. All right, be well.
Thank you now.